Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is November the 28th, and we are in Sefer Shmuel. And last time we read in Parak Beis, in the second chapter, we read from Pasuk Yod Aleph, from verse 11 all the way to the end of the chapter. And we discussed the sins of the Bnei Eli, the children of Eli, the sons of Eli. And we left a few points that need to be covered this evening. The last time, to recap, we showed the Navi points out three sins that they did, or at least that were going on in the Beis HaMikdash. And we explained the general idea of what was going on, of why the sins happened, since the Bnei Eli themselves were great tzaddikim. And that we pointed out that the Gemara tells us that anybody who says the Bnei Eli sinned is making a mistake, which doesn't mean they didn't do anything wrong, but it means that they didn't do what it appears they did, that what they did was much more subtle and much more relevant to their level, and they were being held to a very high standard. So despite the fact that the sins seem pretty egregious, but in fact they were much more subtle than what appears in the Pesukim. So we gave a general understanding of what was going on, but we did not go through specifically each of the sins. The general problem of what was going on, as we explained it, at least the approach we took last week, is that as long as where the Mizbeach was neglected by the Jewish people, and as a result, the proper honor that is supposed to be accorded to Kohanim who are serving in the temple and the proper respect for bringing karbonos, etc., was lacking. And therefore, the position that the sons of Eli took, which was appropriate at one time, was a very tough position. One where there was a demand for respect and a demand for people to understand the significance of what was going on in the Mishkan, because the people had such a low opinion of what was going on. We pointed out that the people's interest in the Mishkan and in the service of the Beis HaMikdash began to change with Elkanah, as he brought more and more people to the Mishkan, and more people were now coming in the door who didn't have a bad attitude, who were simply uninformed, ignorant, because they hadn't been there before. And as a result, the general attitude of the Kohanim should have shifted, and it did not. And Hashem held the Bnei Eli responsible, even though they didn't personally do what was the things that were going on, but there was a general attitude in the Mishkan that was negative. So the three sins that were mentioned were that they would... the lad of the Kohanim would come and with the three-pronged fork, as it says, and he would take whichever meat he wanted to take and did not wait for the owners to give him anything, he would just take. Another one, and the main one, which is accentuated by the Navi later on, is that they took what was due them, which is the chazev ashok, the chest of the animal and the leg of the animal, which is supposed to go to the Kohen, but they took it before the blood was thrown on, before the meat was cooked. They would just take it. And finally, that it says that it literally says they would lie with the women that were waiting at the Mishkan. And we explained that. The Gemara tells us that doesn't mean literally that they did anything like that, but that they delayed the women coming home. The women had to bring a sacrifice after having a baby, and the sacrifice was generally a bird, which is a very small sacrifice, and there's not much meat or anything like that, and they wouldn't give the sacrifice of the women high priority. And the women were left waiting, and therefore they would delay before going home, and it would be overnight, and they would be delayed from their husbands overnight. So it says if, because they kept their wives away from the husbands for more than they had to for an extra night, it was as if they had molested the women. Now, So that's one thing which we need to cover tonight, which is what exactly was going on with those three sins. Second thing we need to talk about is that when the Navi, in this case it's Elkanah, comes to admonish the Eli for what his sons are doing, he says the punishment is going to be that there's going to be a different Kohen who's going to become the Kohen Gadol, and there's some sort of a competition. He says it'll be like a tzar, like a co-wife, is going to come into the Mishkan and take over, and your family will still be part of the service in the Mishkan, but you'll be relegated to a secondary role, and it will be painful to watch that. We have to discuss what are the different families of Kohanim that are being mentioned over here. And finally, there is a philosophical issue which we didn't spell out last time, but the nature of the punishment itself, of what the punishment is for the children of Eli, and that it endures even till today, and what exactly is that punishment, and how to understand it philosophically. So, first of all, let's take the different sins. So, the lad of the coin would come, and he would take whatever meat he wanted to. So, the question is, what kind of how is that justified at all? Taking the meat, it doesn't belong to them. It's in Perek Beis, chapter 2, Pasuk Gimel, verse 13. It says, in Mishpat HaKohanim Es Ha'am, the law of the Kohanim with the nation was, Kol Ish Zaveach Zevach, anybody who was offering a sacrifice, Uvan Na'ar HaKohen, the lad of the Kohen would come, Kivashel HaBasar, while the meat was cooking, V'amazlek Shlosh HaShinan Biyodo, and the three-pronged fork was in his hand, V'hi Kavakir Ovadud Ovakalachas, Ova porur, and he would jab the knife, the fork into whatever container, whatever pot had the meat in it. Kol ha'shoyale hamazleg, whatever the fork would pick up. Yikach ha'koin bo, the coin would take it. Kach ha'yatzu l'chol Yisrael, this is what they would do to all of the Jews. Ha'boim sham b'shiloh, who would come there in Shiloh. So it seems pretty, besides it being very, not being very nice, but it also seems like it's theft. I mean, they came and took meat that didn't belong to them. It's one thing to take the part that's supposed to go to the Kohen, which is the chazeh, the chest, the shulk, and the leg. But the other parts belong to the person who's offering the karban. So it's important to know that when one brings a karban, we're talking here about a karban that the one offering it eats the meat. As we said last time, there are different types of karbanos. Some karbanos, like an ola, get totally burnt. Other karbanos, like a chatas, get partially burnt and partially eaten only by the kohanim, not by the owner. And then there are the type, like a shlamim, which is split three ways. Some of it gets burnt, some of it gets eaten by the kohen, and some of it gets eaten by the person offering the karban. In that case, in the case of the types of karbanos where the person offering the karban does eat from the meat, there is a huge amount of meat to eat. It's not like it's one steak. It's a lot of meat. And the problem is, the meat has to be eaten in a very short time. The meat has to be eaten, the longest period of time that there is to eat meat of a karban would be, for example, a karban shlamim. You have the day that it was offered, that evening, and the next day, until the end of the second day. After that, the meat is now nosar. It's leftover meat. And what has to be done with that meat?
Discarded.
Burned. Has to be burned. In fact, leaving over the meat is an avera. It's a sin. It says, v'lo sosiru mimenu ad boker. You're not allowed to leave it over. It's prohibited to leave it over. If one did leave it over, then one has to burn the meat. To say that, well, I'm going to burn the meat anyway, so it's okay, that's like saying it's okay to steal because I'll return it afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's the same exact thing. Torah says, don't steal. If you do steal, return it. Stealing is still a sin, mm-hmm. even if you're going to return it afterwards. Here as well, burning it afterwards doesn't take away from the fact that leaving it over is a sin. And there was a lot of meat that had to be eaten. Just picture a large animal, even if it's not a cow, which is gigantic. But a sheep or a goat, there's a lot of meat on a sheep or a goat, and so some of the fats are burned, the chest and the leg go to the Kohen, okay, but there's still a lot of meat there. And it had to be eaten at most, you had 36 hours. But remember, it wasn't even 36 hours because you had to offer it first. So you brought it to the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say you brought it first thing in the morning. So let's say by 10 o'clock in the morning, it was already burned. So you have the rest of today, the balance of today. You have the night, and you have the next day. I mean, how much are you going to eat already? You'll have steak for lunch. You'll have steak for dinner. You'll have steak for midnight snack. You'll have steak for breakfast. You'll have steak for lunch the next day, and eat an early dinner and have steak again. What are you going to do? I mean, it's meat. It's a lot of meat. So the way this was normally handled when the Beis HaMikdash was functioning properly is that you invited people. You didn't do it yourself. When you brought a shlamim, which was a karban for a good reason, a festive occasion, then you would bring people with you. You'd bring your family with you. You'd bring your extended family. You'd invite friends. It would be a festive occasion, and you would all have a nice big meal. And, you know, you'd that's what you do in Yerushalayim. So that would be the typical thing to do. In fact, the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, writes that this is how he explains a very interesting problem that we find, or difficulty that we find. A shlamim, as I just mentioned, you have the day, the night, and the day to eat. That's a regular shlamim. A karban toda, which is a Thanksgiving offering, a karban toda, it's the same animal as a shlamim. It's the same large animal. But in addition to the animal, you also have to bring 40 loaves of bread and matzah. Different types of bread and matzah have to be brought. Of those 40 loaves, 4 go to the Kohen, 36 have to be eaten by the owner of the karban. So when you bring a karban toda, Thanksgiving offering, you've got that whole animal to eat, and you have all this bread, you have all these carbs to eat, in addition to the meat. What makes it more difficult is that a karban toda, you only have 24 hours to eat. You only have that day and the night. You don't have the next day. So the Netziv asks, it seems counterintuitive, there's a lot more food to eat and a lot less time. How could that be? So the Netziv writes, because when someone brings a karban toda, a Thanksgiving offering, the Torah wants it to be a public affair. The Torah doesn't want you thanking God privately. The Torah says, if you're going to thank God for something, the Hashem says, I want you to do it in a way that everybody knows about it. So I'm going to give you a mitzvah of a karban toda, which is going to have a lot more food and a lot less time, which means you're going to have to invite a lot more guests. And you're going to bring a lot of people with you to Yerushalayim to celebrate the whatever you're thanking Hashem for. And that's the nature of a karban toda. So this is the what generally happened with karbanos is you brought other people with you to help you eat it. Now a karban chatas, a sin offering, is not eaten by the owner. A sin offering is partially burned and partially eaten by the kohen. Now that makes sense because there's no mitzvah to publicize the fact that a person did a sin. If a person did a sin, that's between me and God. It's nobody else's business. The kohen knows about it because I got to enlist his help to bring the karban, but I don't invite guests with me to bring a karban chatas, a sin offering. There's nothing for me to eat. There's nothing for them to eat. I'm not going to invite guests for that. But a shlamim, which is a peace offering, or a toda, especially a Thanksgiving offering, I'm going to bring people with me. It seems, yeah.
When you say that it's cooked, is it boiled? Is it put on a spit?
It's roasted.
It's roasted. They have roasting pits, like big barbecue pits.
Yeah.
Where was that located?
All of it, well, depending on the karban, some karbanos had to be eaten on the Har Habayis, on the Temple Mount. Others could be eaten in all of Yerushalayim, which means the Old City. So depending on what we're having, a shlamim could be the whole city.
So how would the fats then be taken?
No, the fats had to be taken before.
The fats are taken and the Kohen part is taken up on the Temple Mount.
Yeah.
And then people could go to their own
place
to cook it.
Yeah. They were cooking some meat and the Kohen would come and take it while it was still cooking. So evidently, the Kohen could come take it when it was off the Temple Mount also. It didn't have to be in the temple, but if it was the type of karban that couldn't leave the Temple Mount, then they would eat it there. Just depending on what it was, the kohen didn't have to stay in the Beis HaMikdash.
So it's on the spit, and he's taking the 3-pronged fork and pulling it off. Like, won't some of it fall
in a pot?
Yeah. Well, here it says it was in a pot, so I don't know.
That's what made me think it was.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. The reason why it's roasted is because the we always treat the Beis HaMikdash like a wealthy and upscale place. And roasting is the least efficient way to make to cook your meat. It may taste best, but it's the least efficient way. Because if you boil it, so then you get the broth, and you can include vegetables. You can do all kinds of other stuff with it, and it lasts longer. You can make it more. The least efficient way is roasting it over a fire, where you lose a lot of it. You can't expand it. But it is considered to be the way the wealthy will have it, because it's the best meat. That's why the carbon paste off is roasted.
But I'm just, by the time you take the breast off and the two legs.
One leg goes to the
corner. Just one leg,
yeah.
Right or
just
left?
Right.
Right leg.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess you could still.
Yeah.
It was healthier though, wasn't it? It had the fat drip out of it.
Yeah, this I don't
know. Well, they had actual doctors all the time in the temple.
They had a Kohen in charge of medicine. It wasn't because of the carbs and cholesterol, no. It was because they were barefoot on the marble floor, and they had a lot of meat to eat and a lot of oil that they had to eat. Oil, salad dressing, whatever, but it was a lot of, you know, so the type of diet that they had while they were serving the Beis HaMikdash was not conducive to a calm stomach. So
protein is very energizing.
It's a gout-inducing diet.
Pardon? It's a gout-inducing diet.
But it wasn't for a long period of time. See, the Kohanim didn't work
2 weeks a year.
Yeah, once they got set up into shifts of 24, it was 2 weeks a year. Yeah. Right. It was intense during those 2 weeks, but it wasn't like they did this all year round.
Wouldn't it be slippery with the grease dripping?
Yeah, and forget the grease. There was blood everywhere.
That's very slippery.
Yeah.
I have a question. So the lad, is that the two sons of?
No. It was one of the lads of the Kohen. There were a lot of Kohanim.
Okay.
Was, you know, the younger Kohanim.
So when he put the fork in the meat, does that mean it was still raw? It wasn't completely cooked?
No, here it was cooking. Mrs. Lewis is asking, it was in a pot, which is a good question. I didn't think of that. It's a good question.
How do you roast in a pot?
Yeah, no, so it evidently it wasn't roasting, which is a question to me why it wouldn't have been roasted. It's a good point. I don't know the answer. I'm obviously making a mistake. I don't know what it is, though.
Did you have to eat it? Or well done?
I don't think it mattered. I think it was to your taste.
Yeah.
I think it was to your taste.
If they were going to take some of the meat away to eat it, does everybody that's going to eat the meat have to be there at that time to take it away, or they can wait at home? And
well, they had to be where you're allowed to eat the meat. The meat couldn't leave the old city of Yerushalayim.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going to bring guests with you, I mean, the hotel business in Yerushalayim, that was a big deal. Everybody needed to stay somewhere when they came to Yerushalayim. Even not during the Shalosh Shogalim, not during the festivals, they still needed to be there. So it was a common thing.
Which karbans could not leave the Temple Mount?
A Shlamim and a Toda could go in the whole city of Yerushalayim. And that's the ones we're talking about here. A chatas, a sin offering, could not leave the Temple Mount. And asham, which is another type of sin offering, could not leave the Temple Mount.
What does an asham mean?
Asham is a different type of sin offering. It was for specific types of sins. The chatas is the general one. The asham is the more specific one.
And so the asham only is kohanim eating kohanim and burnt?
No. It's always something always goes to the mizbeach. Something always gets burnt. And then you build from there.
Were there more than 50 people at the same time giving the carbon?
It depended on the time, but whatever it was, however many people were doing it, there was a commensurate amount of Kohanim. The Kohanim generally were the same
percentage
of the population. There is an exception to that, which we'll learn about later in Sefer Shmuel. But generally speaking, the Kohanim were percentage wise the same. So however many people were bringing karbanos, there were that many kohanim processing them.
Because, you know, a lot of women gave birth.
There were offerings.
And, you know, I'm imagining, you know, 50 people at a time.
Yeah, but bear in mind that before Elkanah popularized it, people were neglecting their responsibilities. They weren't
no
bringing...
One was showing up.
Not no one, but it wasn't being done the way it should be. People were not offering their sacrifices the way they should. They were late. You know, they were pushing it off. You know, like all mitzvahs. If it's the kind of mitzvah which people don't concentrate on, then it falls by the wayside.
So, do we have any record at the height of when we were doing it the right way? How many coins?
I don't know. I don't know. Lots, but I don't know.
Doing this and
yeah, I don't know.
Legs were flying and I don't know.
I don't know. Listen, we really have to go on.
Could you just enumerate the five? It's five offerings, right?
Five types of offerings?
Right. What,
there's more. There are more than five.
There's more than
five? Yeah, there are more than five. Yeah.
Where do I find those?
In the
Parsha. Parsha's Vayikra is where it starts.
Didn't you give a class?
I did. I gave a three-part series one summer on this. It is online. So if you want to catch up on that, you can. Okay. Now, when the Jews were not treating coming to the Mishkan properly, so inevitably a person would bring a karban and there wouldn't be enough people to eat it.
Yeah.
That would be inevitable because they weren't treating it the way they should. So just as they were neglecting how often they would come and how quickly they would come, they were also neglecting when they would bring the karban, thinking ahead enough to bring enough people to eat it. So it was not uncommon that they would be roasting all this meat or cooking all this meat, and then it wouldn't get eaten in time, it would have to get burned. So Chofni and Pinchas set up a system in the Beis HaMikdash where it was common practice for the Kohanim to assert themselves and take meat, because otherwise it's going to go to waste. And that's an Avera. They were actually saving people from themselves because people were not doing this properly. So they bring a karban, doing a big mitzvah to bring a karban, and then do an Avera of not eating it in time and not having enough people to eat it. So they would come and send the land. This was the common practice, as it says, Mishpat HaKohanim. It was in Yud Gimel 13. Mishpat HaKohanim was the law of the Kohanim. It was the way of the Kohanim. The atmosphere in the Beis HaMikdash in the Mishkan was that when there's meat being roasted, the Kohanim would come indiscriminately and take whatever meat they wanted to take, because that way the meat would get finished. It's not that they took all the meat. It's not that there wasn't any meat left for the owners. It was that the owners could never finish what was there. So they would come and take, and they would take whoever was hungry and wanted to eat meat. They would just come and take. And that way the meat got finished. That practice was a fine practice as long as people had a bad attitude. As long as there weren't enough people coming to the Beis HaMikdash, that was a good thing to do. It's not what the Torah says to do, but it wasn't anti the Torah. It was a system that was set up to deal with a problem. The problem was that people were wasting meat right and left, which is an Avera. No, sir. So this way, if you have a situation where those who are living in and around the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim, are always ready to take meat, so that prevents the problem. But once there were people coming on a regular basis, that Elkanah had popularized the Beis HaMikdash, and now people were coming with enough people to eat, and they weren't mistreating the karban, now the system should have shifted. And there should have been some oversight where Chafni and Pinchas would have changed the rule and said, okay, that's it, we're stopping this now. People, you know, Kohanim should no longer do it. But the lad was still coming and taking meat. They didn't take responsibility to make sure to stop the practice. It could be Chofni and Pinchas personally did stop themselves from doing what it was this, but they didn't assert themselves over the class of Kohanim and say, okay, that's it, we don't do this anymore.
Besides the Kohanim, who might have been living in the old city, were there Jews? I mean, could like a poor Jew come and like,
yeah,
could it be like a soup kitchen where they come and get meat?
But this wasn't, you're talking about time, this was in Shiloh. Right, so this is.
Oh, so it couldn't leave Shiloh because it couldn't get to the old city.
Yeah, this is all in Shiloh. I was talking about when I said the old city, I was talking about the Beis HaMikdash. Here in Shiloh, they had equivalent boundaries. They had the area that would be considered the equivalent to the Temple Mount area that was considered equivalent
to. Could four people go there and just show up?
They could. It was, you know, they have to be tahar. You know, you got to have gone to the mikvah and all that. You know, whatever that requires. So in theory, they could. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't. There were so many people in the Beis HaMikdash. There probably wasn't a surplus. But in the time of Shiloh, that was the issue. There weren't enough people eating it, so there was leftover meat.
So is that the northern tip? tribes? Am I got the right ear?
There was no northern, southern. It was all one thing.
Yeah. It's later. It's later.
What came later? This comes later.
No. There was no split in north and south yet.
Is that sort of like the beginning of a thread of it coming in?
No. Shiloh is located in the tribe of Yosef, but there was no split yet. That's later on. So that was sin number one, and that explains where they were coming from, why there would be such a practice in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. The second one is that they would take the meat prematurely, which means not so much, it wasn't that it was before, as we mentioned last time, the blood had already been thrown on the altar, which is when the meat becomes permitted to be eaten. However, the fats weren't yet burned on the altar. In theory, it's not prohibited for the Kohen to take his due, the chaz of a shok, the chest and the leg, prior to the fats being burned on the altar. However, it's not in the spirit of the law, because as we would think, Hashem should get his due first. Obviously, Hashem doesn't eat anything, but the part that's being offered to Hashem, which is going to be burnt up completely, that should be done first. Then the Kohen should get his thing. And here, they would come and take the meat. And again, it was the lad who would come in Pasuk Tesvav 15, that before they would burn the fat, the lad of the Kohen would come and he would say to the one who was bringing the carbon, give meat to roast for the Kohen. And he will not take from you cooked meat, only raw, and he'll roast it himself. And then the man would say, let them first burn the fats, and then you'll take what you want. And he would say, no, you're going to give now, and if not, I'm going to take by force. And you can't stop me, I'm going to take what it is now. So this was a response to the fact that when Jews were coming to the Mishkan, and they were supposed to give the Chazev Ashok, the chest and the legs of the Kohen, it's the same problem. That as long as people were neglecting the mitzvah of coming to the Mishkan, when they did come, they didn't do it properly. So they wasted meat, and they didn't necessarily give the Kohen what they were supposed to give the Kohen. Because this wasn't a priority. The mitzvah was neglected. And when you neglect the mitzvah, all details of the mitzvah get neglected. So people didn't know, people didn't ask, people didn't care. It was apathy. So there was this general attitude when Jews came to the Mishkan, this. So the Kohanim, again, putting ourselves in the mindset of a very small minority trying to hold on to this mitzvah, which is being so neglected, so they asserted themselves. They said, the Chaz of Ashok belongs to the Kohen, and you're going to give it to the Kohen. And we're going to take it now. We're not going to wait till later when you may disappear and we won't know where you are and we'll never get it. We're taking it now. And if you try to stop me, I'm going to take it by force. That was a good thing as long as the Jews were not treating the Kohanim with the respect that they should have. As long as the Jews were just their whole attitude when they came to the Mishkan was one of, at best, apathy and possibly antagonism, and just not being helpful in general to make the mitzvah done properly, then the Kohanim had to assert themselves to make sure the meat got eaten, to make sure that the Jews did not eat the part that belongs to the Kohen. In fact, it went to the Kohen instead. And that sort of thing, so the general practice in the Mishkan was that the Kohanim would walk around, and when someone had their meat, then they would come, and as soon as they would see, they would take the Chaz of Ashok, take it right away. Don't wait. Don't wait for them to cook it. Don't wait for it. Just take it. Because otherwise, who knows what's going to happen.
But they can't leave that area of Shiloh.
The
so
area of Shiloh, it was a large area. It was like picture the old city of Yerushalayim. So it would be that size area. There were buildings or whatever it is. Who knows, you know. You weren't walking. It wasn't like a police system.
It's at Shiloh, and it's at the top of the.
No. I think if I remember correctly, it's any place that where you can see
right,
Shiloh.
All the other mountains.
Wherever you can,
where they could see.
Right, you could still see Shiloh.
Right,
but that would count as part of the of that would be like.
So they were afraid they would walk off.
Yeah, they would go off. People were all over the place. You know, it wasn't like.
Because like nowadays it's totally open on all sides.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how many sides.
It was destroyed. I mean, we're going to learn about it.
Right, but were there sides to it? Or
I don't know.
So there was no entrance and exit you could man?
In other words, was it a walled city?
I don't believe it's a walled city.
I don't think it was.
Yeah, I don't believe so.
It's open.
Yeah. So again, it's the same type of thing. As long as people were not treating the situation the way they should, then it was appropriate to have some sort of safeguard in place where the Chaz of Ashok wouldn't walk off by themselves somewhere, right? Where the Kohanim would be able to get a hold of what they have to get a hold of, which is also an Avera for the Jews not to give it to the Kohen. They're supposed to give these two pieces to the Kohen. If they don't, it's an Avera. So the Kohanim asserted themselves. But once things started to change, so again, we see that Chafi and Pinchas did not take responsibility to say, okay, to call a general meeting of all Kohanim and say, we are now changing the system. We're changing our minhagim. From here on in, we're going to do things in a softer way, whatever. They didn't do that. So they didn't take responsibility. Because they didn't take responsibility, they were held accountable.
Is there any one of the Kohanim that would take it upon themselves to educate the people before they got up there to do their sacrifice?
It could be they tried. My impression is that people weren't interested in being educated. That was part of the problem. That was part of the issue. Elkanah changed that. Elkanah made people interested in the whole concept of the Mishkan. What I'm picturing is, and not that this was everybody, but that it was probably not uncommon, that when someone brought a karban to the Mishkan, they were doing it begrudgingly, they weren't interested, it was a lot of money, they didn't want to be there, and it was one of these, it was coming with an attitude. It was coming with a bad attitude. And when you come with a bad attitude, then everything goes wrong. So, right, that's the way I'm picturing it, and the Kohanim had to match that, you know, with some sort of way of making sure that it was done right. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart. So, but that started to thaw over time with Elkanah's work, and there wasn't a commensurate thawing on the part of the Kohanim. Not because Chafni and Pinchas were deliberately keeping up this strong-armed way of doing things, but because they didn't take responsibility to change it.
Now, just this pattern of events. So, Chafni and Pinchas are doing these things. At one point, is their father reprimanding them as opposed to Elkanah coming to reprimand them?
He doesn't until the way we learned it last time was, let's see. Verse 22 is when it says it's before Elkanah comes.
So even after their father reprimands them, they don't change.
They don't take responsibility, right? Right.
But their father is also punished right along with them.
Well, yeah. I mean, he is. He's just punished because
he did tell him stop this.
Yeah, yeah. But it wasn't. The Chazal say that he was also held responsible because he didn't say it strongly enough. It's the same. You know, it's the same general idea that it seems that Hashem felt that they were not. Being assertive enough. Clearly, they, Eli towards his children and Chafi and Pinchas towards the rest of the Kohanim, either felt that it was improper to reprimand strongly, or they felt they didn't have the authority to reprimand strongly. Whatever it is, Hashem said they were wrong, that they should have reprimanded strongly.
Okay, so let's say there were five different places where they were resting. So they had to take the innards first?
Before. While it was still at the altar, they slaughtered it. The Kohanim slaughtered it, and they threw the blood on the altar. They cut it up, took out the fat that was brought to the Mizbeach to be burned. Then the meat was given over to the owners, and the owners would cook it, whatever it is, give the Chaz of Ashok to the Kohanim and eat whatever they were supposed to eat.
So they took the fats and the innards?
The fats and the innards, yeah. The when I say the fats, it includes all the innards. Some of them were burned, some weren't, but depending on what it was.
I thought it was barbecued or cooked in front of them and then given.
No. The owner would take it and roast it wherever they wanted to, and they weren't limited by the way we're limited, where you have to find a stove. Everything was portable. You know, they built their own, you know, makeshift stove wherever they wanted or oven wherever they wanted to. The Kohen would insist on taking the Chaz of Ashok, taking the part that belongs to him, and even while it was roasting and it wasn't the Kohen's portion, they would come and take meat because it was going to go to waste.
I see. So they went away.
Yeah. It was within a certain area, but they could be anywhere in that area.
It must have smelled good around
there. It must have smelled good. Yeah.
In the Beis HaMikdash, there were people that would sell sheep and cows and goats and things like that. Here, would they have to travel with their own?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I'm sure it was not as developed as it was later on in time of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's the impression we're getting from this whole thing. Everything was underdeveloped. Everything was under, where it should have been a very developed system. That's what should, because we Jews should have treated the Mishkan with the utmost reverence, and therefore it would have been a very developed system, just like it's going to be later on.
I'm trying to imagine if I'm traveling with an animal somewhere along the way, that animal could get a moon, and then be disqualified, and then.
Yeah.
Like, so, what do I do at that point?
So I'm sure there are entrepreneurs who you know, made sure to show up around the area of the Mishkan with sheep and goats like that. But because there were fewer people coming to the Mishkan, the demand wasn't so...
Right.
So
wasn't the system set up already in the Midbar when the Mishkan was erected?
Yeah, but there it was in the Midbar, in the wilderness, things were much more regimented. We were all set up in certain places, and Moshe was in the middle. The whole thing was much more regimented, and we had Moshe right there.
Right.
Once we got into Israel, people scattered.
Right.
It wasn't the same type of regimentation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the third sin was delaying the women. At the Mishkan. So here it's a little bit different. The women would bring, as I said, a bird to be offered. Now, the bird that was being offered is not eaten by the owner of the karban. A bird is never eaten by a non-Kohen. Only a Kohen eats the bird, or it's totally burned.
Okay.
So the women would bring this karban. The truth is that the women didn't need to stay. They could give the bird over to the Kohanim, and they could leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have to stay there. The women wanted to see the carbon brought, because if the carbon wasn't brought yet, if it wasn't offered, then the women still... Let me step back. Let me give you a sense of what happens after a woman has a baby in terms of tumah and tara, purity and impurity, because that's really what's going on over here. Today, this isn't relevant at all, because today we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so there are no karbanos to bring. We can't do it. So none of this is relevant. But in the time that there is a Beis HaMikdash, when a woman has a baby, if she has a boy, it's one set of days, and a girl knows. I had not thought I was going to go through this whole thing, but let's do it, because otherwise we're not going to understand what's going on over here. So let's go through the whole system. So we know that there are times when a woman is prohibited to her husband. When a woman has a baby, she becomes prohibited to her husband. According to the Torah, that prohibition time, if she has a boy, lasts for 7 days, and for a girl lasts for 14 days. After that, she has a period of time where, no matter what is happening to her physically, she's permitted to her husband. So, for a boy, after the first 7 days, where she's prohibited to her husband, no matter what's happening to her physically, she's prohibited to her husband, for the next 33 days until day 40, she's permitted to her husband, irrespective of what's going on with her physically. And with a girl, everything is double. It's 14 days of prohibition, and then 66 days of being permitted. Again, all that is irrespective of what's happening to her physically. That's according to the Torah. Today, we don't practice this. Today, we just say it's based on what's going on physically, and that's it. Just like any other time, just like when there's a baby, when there's no baby, the same rules that apply when there's no baby apply when there is a baby. We don't make any differences today, and that has to do with our own lack of knowledge of how things work. That lack of knowledge goes back already for over 1,000 years. But I'm going through with you what the Torah's law is, not what is in practice today. So according to the Torah's law, again, there is the first set of time, 7 days for a boy, 14 days for a girl, where a woman is prohibited to her husband, and then the next set of time where she's permitted to her husband, 33 days for a boy, 66 days for a girl. So for a boy, the 7 and 33 equals 40. Day 40 is the end of that time. And for a girl, it's 14 and 66 till day 80. Day 80 is the end of that time. although she's permitted to her husband, but she is not permitted to go to the Beis HaMikdash. There is a level of impurity called Mechusar Kippurim, which is a level of impurity where a woman is kind of in the middle. She went to the mikvah already, and she's permitted to her husband, but there is this stretch of time where she hasn't completed her purity. That's relevant to going to the Mishkan, and also eating kachim, eating karbanos. During those first 40 days for a boy, or 80 days for a girl, then even though she's permitted to her husband, she cannot walk into the Beis HaMikdash, and she cannot eat of karbanos. So if she were invited to a karban meal, she wouldn't be able to eat it during that time. So on day 40 for a boy, or day 80 for a girl, she brings her karban, and when that karban is offered, now she's completely pure. So not only is she permitted to her husband, which she has already been for a long time, she now is permitted for everything else. To go into the Beis HaMikdash, to eat karbanos, all of that now kicks in. The karban that she brings, the bird that she brings, as I mentioned before, she doesn't have to be there when they slaughter it and burn whatever they burn and all that. She doesn't have to be there. She just has to offer it, and then she can go home. And as long as they've taken care of it, then all the rules now are in place, and she's totally pure. When the women came in the time of Hophni and Pinchas, and they brought the karbanos, they would bring it, and they would give it to the Kohen, and the Kohen would say, okay, fine, you can go home. And the women wouldn't go home. Why wouldn't the women go home? Because the women were afraid that the Kohen was not going to take care of the karban in a timely manner. That rather than take care of it right away, it would get delayed and delayed, and maybe it would wait till tomorrow. And she wouldn't know her status. Again, it's not relevant to her status with her husband, but it is relevant to her status with eating other kachim or whatever, and they wouldn't be willing to leave because they wanted to know for certain that the karban was brought. So this was a problem that, again, Hophni and Pinchas are being taken to task for, because it's not that they did anything bad. They didn't tell the women, stay here. We already explained that when it says that they literally laid with them, but that's not what happened. What really happened is they delayed them. But they didn't delay them. They didn't say to the women, okay, you'll have to wait here until we're ready. Don't go away. It wasn't like that. They didn't tell them to stay. It's that because of the fact that they didn't have a system in place where it was clear the women's karban was going to be taken care of in a timely manner, the women of their own volition stayed because they were afraid it wasn't going to be taken care of. So the system in the Mishkan was one that gave anxiety to the women. That's what it was. It was a system that promoted anxiety. It wasn't a system that gave the women confidence that their karban will certainly be taken care of. You can go home. Yeah.
With some other karbans, I was taught that the Kohen, if they had the wrong thoughts when they were doing the sacrifice, that it was like null and void.
Yeah.
So maybe the women were checking.
That could be. It could be. You wouldn't know if they did or didn't.
But would the Kohen be able to?
They would have to tell
it,
you.
Like, yes.
Yeah, no, the Kohen would admit it, but they would have to tell you.
But if you weren't there, they couldn't tell you.
Right. So that may have been part of it also. But the general point was that the women were afraid to leave. They were afraid to leave. So again, no one was holding them down. No one was keeping them there. No one chained them. No one locked them up. But they were afraid to leave because they were afraid.
When a woman said to him, like, Kohen, here is my bird. My husband is doing a Thanksgiving sacrifice, a Toda sacrifice. Please take care of this so I can go eat that sacrifice.
I'm sure there were requests like that. And I'm sure some of them were honored and some of them were delayed. You know, and it wasn't this thing where no, sorry. It wasn't like that. It was probably just that there was no one on top of the situation.
Right.
No one was there to say, okay, this needs to be done now.
Couldn't you see a woman giving the sacrifice and the husband being grateful that his family has been increased doing the Toda sacrifice?
Yeah. It could certainly be the case. This is just another example of a lack of leadership. That's really what was happening over here. They didn't. Hophni and Pinchas, who should have been the leadership of the Kohanim, telling people this is what has to, asserting themselves about this needs to be done this way, this is this way. Instead, there's a general lack of organization, lack of leadership. And when that happens, then things go wrong. And that's what's happening over here as well. And on their level, on Hophni and Pinchas' level, because they were such great tzaddikim, the punishment is extremely severe for not taking the leadership that they should have taken. Okay, so this is the what was happening with these three sins. And as we already mentioned, the first and third are not the main sins. The main sin is the middle one, because it was an affront to the honor of Hashem himself. So that's what went on. Now, I mentioned to you last time, I need to end a few minutes early this evening. We still haven't covered, and we're going to, Mr. Hashem, do this next time. I understand we're crawling through this, but we have to understand it very well. We have not covered what were the various families of Kohanim. It's a very interesting study of the various families of Kohanim, mm-hmm. and the Eli family and a different family. What was that all about? And then also, we do need to cover philosophically the issue of how can a punishment affect all future generations of Eli, because this punishment goes on forever. It's all future generations of Eli. This is something which everybody struggles with, not just in this context, but there are other contexts as well. For example, the golden calf.
Right?
Hashem says, Uviyom paktiu fakarati alehem chatasam. Whenever I punish the Jews, I'm going to include some punishment of the golden calf. That means today, we also, unfortunately, God forbid, but we get punished for the golden calf. That was thousands of years ago. We weren't there, and why should we be punished for something that our great 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 ancestors did? It doesn't seem consistent with the rest of the Torah. So here, there's a nice discussion I saw Rabbi Shimon Krasner, who is one of the members of the staff of Neri Yisrael in Baltimore. He's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He used to be I used to be a neighbor of his, let's put it that way. We were in the same building. He has a series of Svarim, of books on Navi, and he tackles things like this. So he has a very, very nice presentation over here, which I want to share with you as well. So those are the two things that will probably take us the bulk of the time next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.